translation. This supreme science,
was thus received,
through the chain, of desired succession. And saintly kings, understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken.
And therefore,
the science as it is,
appears to be lost.
Translation without repetition. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of desired succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the desired succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord Himself that the desired succession was broken, and therefore He declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized desired succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by Parampara, desired succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Yashovardhana Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj ki
jai.
There should be some time at the end for questions. So if you could be ready for that, if during the course of the lecture have any questions, they could be written down. Evam is the first word, thus, in this way. This refers to the previous verse. What's the previous verse? Can anyone say without looking at the book? Say it loudly, please.
Himapurivasvade yogam proktavanamadvayam vivasvanmanave praha manurikshvakave avrali.
So in this verse which you've just recited, the beginning of the parampara is mentioned, at least within chronological time as we can understand it, because ultimately this parampara has no beginning or end. Avyayam. His knowledge is inexpendable. That's the exact translation of avyayam. It's not spent. The knowledge itself does not decrease. Here it said yogaha nashtaha. The science of one's knowledge with the science of the knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme was destroyed in course of time, but actually it's not destroyed, but only from our human perspective. The knowledge can never be destroyed, but it becomes non-extant in human society, becomes lost or corrupted. So then the parampara is re-established, and within time, as we perceive it from this plane, the parampara is begun and it continues. And we say that various acharyas, they appeared in certain periods of time. But then again, we've heard it said that Guru is one. Because they all, Guru means, actually Guru means Krishna. Krishna is the Guru. And other Gurus, they are representatives of Krishna, and in that sense, non-different from Him, because they all speak the same message, therefore one. What we are discussing today is exactly in line with what Krishna spoke to Arjuna on the battlefield 5,000 years ago. And what He spoke to Vivasvan many millions of years ago. And what He will continue to speak in various universes, in various times and places for eternity. Because it is yoga, which Srila Prabhupada has translated here as the science of one's relationship with the Supreme. That does not change. But we change. That's our problem. We are not yoga yukta. Yoga yukta bhavarjana. We are not fixed in this knowledge. We are not yukta. We are detached from Krishna. So therefore we have to receive this knowledge. And the parampara system is the system. It's a natural system actually. It's not an artificial system. It's a natural system established by Krishna in this world for distributing this knowledge. It's a natural system. Inasmuch as Krishna, who knows, speak to persons who are worthy to receive, and they speak to other persons who are worthy to receive. And it goes on like this, in parampara succession, disciplic succession. Now the disciplic succession particularly mentioned here is that of Rajarshis, kings, not just kings, saintly kings. Generally we may think that Bhagavad Gita is a discussion for Brahmanas, or very highly philosophical persons. The topics discussed in Bhagavad Gita are highly philosophical. Kim tad brahma, kim adhyatma, it's all these very highly philosophical terms. So actually it's meant for highly philosophical people, and Bhagavad Gita, through the course of history, at least in modern history, by modern history in the Vedic cultural perspective, I mean, we're talking about the last 2,000, 3,000 years or so, that's mostly discussed by Brahmanas. When we think of parampara, we think of gurus, acharyas, they're Brahmanas, people who can study and spend their time to apply their transcendentally illumined intelligence to understand these difficult subject matters. It's a subject matter for Brahmanas. Kings are busy managing. But here we see that the parampara that Krishna is speaking of is of kshatriyas. And Arjuna himself was a kshatriya. Kshatriyas, they are said to be of Rajagun. Or else somewhere it's stated that they're of mixed sattva and raja. Why should that be? Because in the very first sentence of the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings, especially meant for them. Not, Prabhupada doesn't say for the Brahmanas, but for the saintly kings, because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Bhagavad Gita is practical. It's not simple, as Prabhupada often mentioned, it's not meant for armchair philosophy, simply sitting and discussing. It's meant for practical application. How it can be applied in ruling the citizens. Here, ruling the citizens doesn't mean exploiting the citizens, but practically applying the knowledge of Gita so that the whole society can be benefited, and everyone can benefit from this knowledge. This knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is practically applicable in our lives. When we see ourselves becoming too much attached or to some situation or some position, and then we can understand this is material attachment. As discussed in Bhagavad Gita, everything here is temporary. We can see the actions of the modes of material nature. We see the newspaper, and we don't take much interest in that because we see that these are simply persons impelled by the lower modes of nature. We don't pay much attention to the opinions of various philosophers and various politicians, because we know that these are persons in ignorance. They have no knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. They're not fit to give any opinion. So the kings, specifically the Rajarshis, they were not just some kind of like a modern politician, nothing like that at all, actually. But they were dedicated to the uplift of the praja, of the citizens, and therefore it was required for them to understand this knowledge. They couldn't rule properly without it. They were saintly kings. They were ruling, but their purpose was the same as the brahmanas. Their actual goal of life was self-realization. And that's why we find described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other shastras how certain kings, they could just give up, although they had the vast kingdoms, they could just give it up. Parikshit Maharaj, we got news that within 7 days he must die from the bite of Takshak. He immediately gave up everything. He didn't become attached. Now I have to protect myself. Of course, it's related like that in the Karmakandya edition of the Mahabharata. But that's not for transcendentalists. The real Parikshit Maharaj very happily accepted this so-called curse and went to do what he really wanted to do, which was the real purpose of his life, which was to spend the rest of his time, 7 days, hearing and chanting about Krishna. You may think, well, that's not very much time. It's not very much time compared to those who spend their whole lives hearing and chanting about Krishna. But the quality of his hearing and chanting about Krishna, you won't find, just like us, when we attempt to hear and chant about Krishna, our minds get distracted and we're thinking about some problems at home or what I'm going to do afterwards. I wonder what's for prasadam. Or we find it very comfortable to fall asleep, especially when we're discussing philosophy. Let's see. But Parikshit Maharaj, he was fully wrapped in attention on hearing the message of Bhagavatam. Bharat Maharaj also, even though he had a young wife, vast kingdom, unchallenged kingdom, but he gave it up. Malavat, the word is used, Malavat, just like you give up stool after Pasya. You don't think, well, that's mine, that's my property. That's everyone's attached to their body, but no one's attached to the stool coming from their body. You give it up. Let some pig enjoy it, or flush it into the someone's drinking water tomorrow after it's been processed. That's the modern system, isn't it? It goes in the sewage system, it gets processed, and then the next day someone's drinking it. So this Bharat Maharaj, he was detached, even though it appeared as if he was attached. The ruler has to see to all the details of the kingdom. But because he was cultivating the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, therefore he was able to immediately be detached. So When we hear this again, we may say, oh, now I have to be detached. But how to be detached? How to be attached? What does it mean to be detached? It doesn't. That again, Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. We don't, because we don't like something, then we just give it up. That's all. But that's not detachment. That's not transcendental detachment. That's material detachment. We've heard of material attachment. There's also material detachment. It's on the mundane platform. One should not one gives up one's duties just because you don't like it. That's material detachment. But one should be neither materially attached nor detached, but one should be attached to Krishna. So cultivating this understanding, this is a very practical. This can be very practically applied in our lives if we are cultivating the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So this knowledge was received in parampara through the kings. And we also have a parampara of acharyas, brahmanas. So however the knowledge is being passed on, that is the parampara. It may not be told in exactly the same words. Just like it wouldn't make any sense for Krishna to tell. In Bhagavad Gita we have Krishna telling Arjuna to fight. But to Vivasvan, presumably it was in a different circumstance. He spoke the same knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So he wouldn't be telling Vivasvan to pick up your bow and fight. And he wouldn't be addressing him as Arjuna. So exactly the same words may not be there. But the same message is there. So in the same way, in the course of the parampara, exactly the same words may not be there. Except exactly the... Because the context is different. According to different people, the knowledge is being spoken to. According to the circumstances. According to the... maybe the cultural conditioning that they're used to. But the message remains the same. This requires deep understanding to convey this message, to absorb it properly, and to again speak this message. It's not just simply a matter of learning the shlokas. Learning shlokas is good. You please learn Bhagavad Gita shlokas. But we have to know how to apply them also. What is the meaning? For that we have to hear this discussion of the topics of Bhagavad Gita. And we have to associate with acharyas. Acharyas means, of course, that term is given to, just like here we have the acharyas. Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So these are acharyas. But actually, acharya means anyone who does that, who acts as an acharya, is an acharya. Of course, there are some formalities, just like in ISKCON, there is some formality before one is approved to initiate within the society. And therefore we speak of ISKCON gurus. But actually everyone in ISKCON is a guru. If you're actually in ISKCON, then everyone's a shishya and everyone's a guru. Everyone's an acharya. Because an acharya means achinoti yashastrani, acharya stapyatyapi, swayam acharate yasmad, acharyas tena kirtitaha. Acharya means one who acts according to Shastra, teaches according to Shastra, verbally and through his behavior. So everyone is supposed to be an acharya. Formally, someone. Formally means upacharik rupse. In a formal manner, one may give initiation, give instruction, but actually everyone is supposed to be an acharya. If one is actually a disciple, then he is an acharya. And one cannot be an acharya without being a disciple. So this way the parampara comes. For one, Krishna speaks, he is Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum. He is the guru of, he is this original source, acharya of everyone. And then he speaks to various people in various times and places. They are his disciples. And they naturally become gurus. Not become a guru. Just like someone, sometimes people ask me, when did you become a guru? But it's not like, you know, you have some rubber stamp put on you and then all of a sudden you become a guru. Or so and so, now he's approved, he's become a guru. But you only get approved to be a guru if you're already a guru. If you're not a guru, then you shouldn't be approved to act as a guru. One, it's approval of that one is fit to formally take that role. But actually, if one is a disciple, then he's automatically a guru. So here you get, there's Krishna, then his disciples, who are gurus, and they have their disciples, and their gurus, they have their disciples, and then their gurus. And in this way, the parampara goes on, and the knowledge is presented in different times and places and circumstances. Maybe not, it won't be exactly the same words. And maybe it won't be presented in the same way exactly as to Arjuna. Just like, I'm not going to say that now we're discussing Bhagavad Gita, so all of you pick up bows and arrows and find someone to shoot at. It's not applicable. People sometimes misunderstand. They say Bhagavad Gita is a call to violence. That's true in one sense. But that's not the core message of Bhagavad Gita. That is the context in which it was presented. But the actual message of Bhagavad Gita is how one should live and act in this world so as to be connected to Krishna, who is in this world but not of this world. Our connection to the spiritual world is re-established by acting in this world as Arjuna did, in the service of Krishna. Now, exactly the same message has to be presented, but in a different packaging or a different presentation, according to the need of the individual disciple and according to the realization of the guru also. That doesn't mean that any interpretation of Bhagavad Gita is as good as any other. But different acharyas, their perception of the unlimited Krishna, there may be various perspectives. No one can fully understand Krishna. But everyone who accepts that I am the servant of Krishna, and they accept the philosophy given by Krishna and apply it practically in their lives, they're all acharyas. They're qualified to teach others, but their perspective may not be exactly the same. And therefore, within the Vaishnava parampara, we have various paramparas who present Krishna consciousness with somewhat different perspective. We have in the modern age, again modern means going back over the last few thousand years, when we speak of modern age in Vedic terminology, it means not just in the last 50 years or so. Srila Prabhupada wrote that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared within the memory of everyone. We don't remember, but it means just a short time ago, 500 years ago. So in the modern age, we have the sampradayas coming down through Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, and Nimbaditya, Nimbarka. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya is coming down. Formerly linked with the Madhva Sampradaya, or we trace the link like that. But in course of time, Krishna says, sakale neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. This science became lost. Yoga is translated here as the science of one's relationship with the Supreme. Now when we say yoga, we generally think of some exercises. Although clearly, in this verse and throughout Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna uses the term yoga, he's not talking about bodily exercises. He's talking about something much more profound than bodily exercises. So this, again, yoga nashta, it didn't become destroyed, but the knowledge of it became spoiled in human society. Well, how does that happen? It happens when a disciple who's hearing the knowledge from a bona fide guru doesn't understand it properly. Doesn't understand it properly. Why should he not understand it properly? What misunderstanding comes not due to academic lacking, but due to rascaldom, actually. Due to not accepting the message of surrender to Krishna because of having other motives, other motivations. So therefore we change things a bit. That even happened with Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. When this first edition was being made in America, the editor changed some things for various reasons. One reason was he didn't understand many of the things which Prabhupada said. Another reason was he didn't accept some of the things Prabhupada said, because, well, I won't say he's a rascal, he's my godbrother, but he was quite new in Krishna consciousness at that time. So just like, for instance, in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada is talking about cleanliness, how one should keep clean by regularly bathing, brushing teeth, shaving, and so on. Now, in the early days of ISKCON in the Western world, Srila Prabhupada was quite lenient. I mean, after all, he was dealing with hippies, which you don't know what are hippies. And you're lucky you don't know. But Prabhupada found out what are hippies. And one of the symptoms of a hippie is he had a beard. Prabhupada, in one purport, and later in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he wrote that Sanatan Goswami looked like a hippie because he had a beard. He was a Muslim, actually. I mean, practically. Not a Muslim, but his name was Dabhyakasan Sakha Malik, Rupan Sanatan Goswami. So he appeared to have adopted that culture. So Prabhupada said he looked, and he was disheveled, having traveled overland. He was a fugitive. He was a runaway. From the government's point of view, he was a runaway criminal, even though he was the ex-prime minister. That can happen. The prime minister today becomes a criminal the next day. It happened so many times. I mean, he was a criminal when he was a prime minister also, but he's officially considered a criminal because he got on the wrong side of the king or the queen or the shah or the sultan or whatever. So Prabhupada said he looked like a hippie. So there was one of Prabhupada's disciples who had a long beard, and he was initiated by Prabhupada, and this was 1966, 1967. So when, in the course of editing Srila Prabhupada's purports on Bhagavad Gita as it is, when it came to the point of one should always keep clean by regularly bathing, brushing teeth, washing one's clothes, shaving, he shaved. He had a long beard and he shaved out of the commentary the words shaving. And he kept his beard. So this is just an example of how someone, due to some material attachment, they may just change it. Change the message a little bit. And you may think, well, it doesn't make that much difference, does it? Maybe it doesn't make much difference, but the attitude there is destructive to Krishna consciousness. And that's the seed of yoga nashta. That when one thinks that, well, actually, we just have to change it a little bit and we'll make it more amenable to the public. Now, that's a fact, that the message of Bhagavad Gita, we have to present it in a manner that people will at least begin to accept it. Preaching, what does preaching mean? It means, preaching to people who are not in Krishna consciousness at all means to somehow or other win their attention and their confidence in us that they want to listen, to somehow or other get their attention and give the message of Krishna to the degree that they're ready to take it or more. So that means we have to start somewhere. So Srila Prabhupada was distributing prasadam to the hippies and he would say, take as much as you can. Eat lots. And then later on, he would say to the devotees, no, sense control. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam. Control the tongue. Don't eat too much. So this appears to be contradictory, but it's giving the message according to the need of the individual. For someone who's on the platform of annamaya, or perceiving the supreme as food, this is annamaya brahma. This prasad is spiritual food. But actually, if we take it as something for my enjoyment, then it's not really prasad. Sometimes the question comes that, well, how much prasad should we take? What if we overeat? What if we take too much? This question came up in class a couple of days ago in Bombay. I was listening to the class. I didn't comment because I was saving my voice so I could say it to all of you later on. I thought when my voice gets better, I'd say. But actually, it is not possible to take too much prasad. Did you all hear that? It's not possible. Everyone should take as much prasad as they can get. But if we think that prasad, the foodstuff offered for us to Krishna, for us to take, if we take that as something for our own enjoyment, then even one bite is too much. We cannot get too much prasad. Prasad means mercy. Too much means the body can only take so much. So if someone brings you one bucket of halava full of ghee, and you think, well, Bhaktivikas Swami just said, you cannot take too much. Anyone here could eat a whole bucket of halava? I don't think so. Maybe when I was younger, I could have done. Believe it or not, I used to eat a lot. But no, a bucket is a bit much for anyone. A whole bucket is, maybe if you're really hungry, maybe half a bucket. But a whole bucket, no one can eat a whole bucket. Maybe someone can try and prove me wrong. But the point is, no one, it's a matter of attitude. No, you cannot take too much. But then if we realize, Krishna Bharadaya Moi Kari Bare Jiva Joy Shaprasadana Dilo Bhai, Krishna has given us this to help us to conquer over the tongue. So for the very neophyte people conquer over the tongue means that take as much as you can. And then you won't have any room for this, what is that, Lay's potato chips you get in India, and here in this country you get all kinds of nonsense things you can purchase from the store. So that saves us from eating nonsense and satisfies our sense of taste. But then if we come to another stage, we can think that, well, actually, I have to use this body not simply for digesting. It has other things to do apart from digesting. It's not the most important function of the body. Sorry if I'm spoiling your business here. I'm not really sorry. I'm being insincere. I'm not sorry. Your business will not be spoiled by this. If everyone can understand fully, then everyone will eat very nicely, very properly, if we can actually understand all these points. So, yeah, if one has the attitude, I am the enjoyer, then even if there is prasad, then if we take even one bite, it's too much. So it's a matter of perspective. That I should take prasad according to my need so that I can maintain the body for serving Krishna Mercy. And then when we join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, again, we can eat fully, up to the neck, and get criticized by Ramachandra Puri. You don't know what I'm talking about because you didn't read Chaitanya Charitamrita. You please read it. Then we can discuss all these topics more and more. So, yeah, all these points have to be understood. They have to be explained in detail. And if there's any, if the idea of personal sense enjoyment comes in, then everything gets spoiled. If one is acting as an acharya, he has to know how to present so that people can take the message of Bhagavad Gita unchanged so that people can take up Krishna consciousness and come up to the level of Arjuna. This one Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj that you should read my books for 2 hours every day. And he said, Tamal Krishna Maharaj replied, well, I don't have time. Prabhupada said, then sleep less. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj replied, well, I'm only sleeping 5 hours average within 24 anyway. And Prabhupada said, anyway, you should sleep less. And then Tamal Krishna replied, well, I'm not a Paramahamsa. And Prabhupada replied, why not? That was Prabhupada always pushing everyone, come on, why are you not a pure devotee? What's wrong with you? Why are you not a Paramahamsa? You got the message of Bhagavad Gita, why don't you surrender to Krishna? That was Prabhupada. You see, Prabhupada was different ways. Sometimes he's encouraging the devotees in a way, yes, just dance, chant, be happy. Other times he's pushing the devotees. Generally we hear the stories of how Prabhupada was just encouraging, but actually a lot of the time there was patting, yes, you're very good, and there was smashing also. There's both. We like to hear the stories of the patting. But often actually the smashing is more effective if he's ready to take it. So this subject matter, if it's not very expertly handled by someone who is free from the desire for sense gratification at any level, that means subtly also, and is speaking the message of Bhagavad Gita to glorify Krishna, to glorify the parampara, and to help others to absorb that message and apply it practically in their life so that they can also surrender to Krishna. then the parampara goes on very nicely. But if at any point in time there's any entrance within the pure parampara of the desire to do anything else but surrender fully to Krishna, then it becomes spoiled. And you may think, well, there are so many devotees, it appears, at least me, who have various gross and subtle desires. Of course, that's there. There's no need of being a disciple if one's already completely pure. I mean, we wouldn't even be in this material world if we were completely pure. But we accept the position of discipleship so we can become instructed and purified. But I was saying that every devotee is a guru, every devotee is an acharya. That's true, but again there's some formal recognition that someone, we don't say that, all right, anyone, you just start giving initiation to anyone and everyone, wherever you like. There's some formal, within our ISKCON society, there's a formal process of recognition if anyone is going to initiate. But as I was saying, no one becomes it's not by the official edict that one becomes a guru. One's already a guru, and therefore one is approved to formally act as a guru, because if one is formally acting as a guru by giving initiation, not only initiation, by giving instruction, and he's not completely pure in his motive, then wrong ideas get introduced into the parampara. And because people are innocent and they may not understand very deeply, then they think that this is correct because the acharya said so. Therefore, there's a checks and balances system, guru, sadhu, shastra. Real guru only speaks what is in shastra. And according to the Amnaivani, which means the parampara, the message of shastra received through parampara. Again, it's not enough simply to learn the shlokas. There are various Mayavadi organizations who are very much interested in teaching shlokas. But to learn the shlokas or even learn the translation, it's not enough in itself. One has to, even practically more importantly, understand the meaning and the application. And the meaning means according to Bhakti Siddhanta. The actual message of Bhagavad Gita is bhakti, surrender to Krishna. So understanding everything in that context. Now if those who are acting as acharyas, they have anything else in their presentation, if they have any other motive, then simply presenting the message of Krishna unchanged for the benefit of others, then the subtle seed of deviation has entered. It may not be visible to others. It may seem very good and very nice and proper. The other day I was listening to a class in which one of our devotees he brought his class to a conclusion by saying that everything should be done for the sake of peace. The ultimate is peace. Everything. So, even though I couldn't speak, I managed to croak something into the microphone after the class and say, well, that's not the ultimate conclusion. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to break the peace. Arjuna wanted to be peaceful. So peace in and of itself is not the goal. Satisfaction of Krishna is the goal. And if Krishna wants violence, then that is far more laudable than peace. Of course, Krishna wanted violence to establish peace. There could have been peace by if the Pandavas had, that's what Arjuna thought. Let's not fight. And then, you know, what's the point? So many people are going to get killed, and if we don't fight, then okay, Duryodhana will go on ruling, and you know, we'll be unhappy, but life will go on, and they will save this carnage. But Krishna saw that this is not auspicious for the world. This will cause so many problems. It's this cleansing, catharsis is required of cleaning out the world. Bhubar Haram, that is one of the functions of Lord Vishnu. He comes to rid the world of demoniac kshatriyas. So it sounds very nice if we say peace, love, compassion. Everyone thinks, well, that's wonderful. And it's true, these things are wanted. But without qualifying these terms in terms of Krishna consciousness, it's just empty sentiment. The same people who are protesting against war in Iraq, they go from their peace rally to the McDonald's and eat a hamburger. It's hypocritical. They're killing the animals, but they want, we shall not kill the humans. The humans are being killed because they are killing the animals. They don't see that connection because they don't read Bhagavad Gita as it is. Prabhupada said that this war, he was preaching among the hippies. I was saying he had to present the message in a manner that they could accept, but that doesn't mean that he compromised it. The hippies were very much against the war in Vietnam because they were being sent there. They would get the draft, they'd forcibly be sent to Vietnam, and there's good chance they'd come back in a white cloth, sewn up bag. In other words, dead. And the girls didn't, at that time, they didn't have, you know, the women's liberation movement wasn't successful by that time, so they didn't send the women to fight, only the men. Now the women have got the right to go to Iraq and shoot people and get shot at themselves because they have equal rights. Nonsense. Why do they want to send women to fight? Anyone here want to send their wife to fight in Iraq?
They are always fighting husband, Maharaj. Where is the time to fight in Iraq?
Yeah, but that fighting with the husband, that is within accepted social norms. I mean, I know you're making a joke, but getting a machine gun and going to fight, and that's a different platform altogether. So, yeah, the girls didn't like it because they wanted the men to enjoy. Their slogan was "Make love, not war." Make love means have sex, in American English. So Prabhupada, he didn't compromise. He was preaching among the hippies. He said, first thing he said was that if the government says you should follow, you voted this government. If they tell you to go and fight, you should go and fight. And another thing he said is that there must be war because they're killing the animals. There must be. So here's just an example. If we speak the message of Bhagavad Gita as it is, to surrender to Krishna, many people may not like that because they're demons. And if we say peace, love, compassion, they may like it because they're demons. And in the name of peace and love and compassion, they make wars and they kill animals and they exploit others, and they put the words peace, love, compassion, humanitarianism, and so on. So through the eyes of Bhagavad Gita as it is, we should understand that this is demoniac. Even though they speak nice words and it sounds nice, it's demoniac. You may think, well, you know, it's Bhakti Vikas Swami again, but it's not. I learn these things from Bhagavad Gita as it is, because this is the message of reality. And reality is heavy. Guru means heavy. We're speaking about parampara. Guru means heavy. That means the message, it's very heavy. If we actually accept that message, then it crushes our material desires. But most people don't want that. Therefore, they want a spoiled version of yoga. Many times people come and ask me for blessings. And I ask them, do you really want my blessings? You don't know what my blessings are. You're just asking for blessings, but if my blessings means that you should have no material enjoyment and completely surrender to Krishna. But people don't want that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was cursed in his youth that you should have no more material enjoyment. He took it as a blessing. So, to actually accept this message, it's very heavy. It's much easier to just change it a little bit. But when we change it a little bit, and then a little bit more, even once you change it a little bit, then it's spoiled. It's no longer the same thing. Learning how to present, as Srila Prabhupada did, the message of Bhagavad Gita without compromising it, but to in various places, to various people, in various circumstances, so that they could begin to accept it and understand it. That's called preaching according to time, place, and circumstance, and changing it, because we don't accept actually what Krishna says. That's a very different thing. To understand this, we ourselves have to surrender to Krishna. At least have the attitude of surrender to Krishna. So therefore, I'm asking everyone to at least read these books. Try to understand this philosophy. There's with so many sannyasis and preachers, senior preachers of ISKCON come to Dubai. They like to come. Why should they not like to come? Because you're all very welcoming and affectionate. So, naturally, so many like to come. So, that's very good. You have very many good qualities. But among many of you, I find there's one major fault. So, as you may know, I'm good at finding even minor faults. So what to speak of major faults? It's the same thing that Prabhupada said. He said, I only have one complaint about my disciples. They don't read my books. And actually, we did read Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada's disciples, when Prabhupada was here with us, we did read Prabhupada's books, because Prabhupada said we should read 1 or 2 hours every day. And devotees used to do that. We used to read the books a lot. But even then, Prabhupada said, you don't read. You're not reading. He would quote a verse. He said, what is this verse? Some obscure verse. And if you don't know what it is, probably say, why are you not reading my book? So Prabhupada wanted this, because in this way we can absorb this transcendental knowledge. It's not received only through reading books, but it is it's a major part of receiving this transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, what are we going to pass on to others? I'm saying every devotee has to be a guru. But we have to understand this knowledge in detail and be able to pass it on to others. That means that we have to take the time out to absorb the knowledge and absorb the knowledge and see how that is to be applied in various circumstances. But if you don't have the basic knowledge, then you can't apply it. Anyway, I have a lot more to say about this, but I'll finish now, because I said I'd take a few questions. But I request all of you, eat less, sleep less, read more. Read these books. then we can discuss more in various things. Can we know the seven saptarshis? This is a technical question. You can look it up yourself. Seven saptarshis are always changing. Who are they? Atri, Kratu, I can't remember just now who they are. Narad Muni is among them. Who are the rest? This is a kind of technical question. You can look. Someone want to look it up? Look it up. The presence saptarshis. It's in the. Where is it? In the 12th canto of Bhagavatam. It's mentioned. It's said that parampara was broken and hence the message again conveyed to Arjuna. But if we see the disciplic succession, Arjuna is not there. You don't see because if you see the disciplic succession, you'll see that Arjuna is there. But because you don't see it, because you think only the list of names given at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that's the disciplic succession. That means you don't understand what disciplic succession is. As I was saying, every devotee is a guru. So certainly Arjuna is there. We don't have any information of Arjuna formally instructing others who became disciples. But he's in the parampara, of course he is. How do we understand that the parampara was broken? Well, I was just explaining that in the whole class, how it becomes broken. Yeah, there you go. Oh, Kratu is not there in the presence. There you go, there's your answer. How do you know when you are ready to get initiated? You're never ready. No one's ever ready. But when the mercy comes, then you can take it. If you think, I'm ready for initiation, now I'm going to choose my guru. I chose such and such. So I go to such and such and say that I've chosen you to be my guru. Out of my causeless mercy, you can initiate me. You're not. No one should ever think I'm ready. We should beg for mercy. BG 646, request a brief explanation. Your servant Ram Nrisimha Das. Where's Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness in Malayalam? What about, you know, Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprashne Sevaya, that you volunteer to do that service? Where is it? I can't see you in this big crowd. Any progress? He's coming, all right. Let's have a look at 640s. Request a brief explanation. Uh-huh. Well, that's a big topic, isn't it? In all circumstances, be a yogi. You have it?
Maybe your forgiveness for not being able to do that. There have been so much of us since Taiwan during this last 6-7 months.
You've lost your voice also?
No. During the last 6-7 months, there have been so much of us since Taiwan. Now I have got a new position as a head of political systems in one group. So I got a secretary who can write in Malayalam just yesterday. So I have just made an arrangement to dictate to him and he will write for me.
Okay, very good.
So you and you.
All right, I remember that you took that up, so... Blessings are there, but you have to do your job also. So, I mean, when you request a brief explanation, I mean...
Difference between tapasvi and yogi.
Difference between a tapasvi and a yogi. Well, As I was saying, yoga doesn't just mean some exercises, and it doesn't just mean... tapasya either. Yoga means all of these things. Ultimately, yoga means to be linked with the Supreme. the science of linking with the Supreme. So one can be a tapasvi, but not a yogi. Hiranyakashipu was a tapasvi, but he wasn't a yogi. So simply to perform tapasya without having the intention of serving Krishna, which is ultimate yoga, it's better than being a bhogi, but it's not as good as being a yogi. And yogi doesn't necessarily mean one who is just sitting performing tapasya. But yogi really means one who is performing activities to link up with Krishna. Now, who comes last? All right. Sri Krishna, something Bhagavad Gita, past Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, but further, is Arjuna didn't pass this message to us, but other persons who was not in the picture. Is this a question? It seems to be the same thing. There's some misunderstanding that obviously the knowledge was spoken to Arjuna and Vyasadeva recorded that. And Arjuna, he acted as the ideal acharya in as much as he surrendered to Krishna. And Vyasadeva recorded that knowledge and later he distributed that to others. So like I say, we don't have any record of Arjuna formally teaching others. But he was an acharya and he set the example of how to accept Bhagavad Gita for all others to follow in future. Regarding time management, we are totally engaged in office work, plus chanting, outreach programs, and rendering devotional service at home, deity worship. But many times we feel complete shortage of time to read Prabhupada's books. Please guide us. Yours servant. That's typical Indian English. Yours servant. Should be your servant. Well, if you have to cut something, maybe cut down on deity worship, because reading is more important. Generally, people are sentimentally attached to deity worship, but actually more important is the main processes are Shravan and Kirtan. So if you have to cut something, then don't do so much deity worship. Save time for hearing and chanting. And try to organize life in such a way that you're not so busy also. It's difficult in the modern age, no doubt. But if there's a will, there's a way. I can't read this. It's not written clearly. I can't understand what it says. When we offer food to Krishna, after which we cover the altar. I don't understand this. It needs the English is not clear.
Kindly explain. Population is increasing alarmingly. Is it not because of
the population is increasing alarmingly? Why are you alarmed? Krishna, it's his job to feed everyone. If anyone should be alarmed, it's Krishna, but he's not alarmed. Is it because of that we cut so many trees, grass, and killing animals, and they get to elevated positions as human beings? No. That's not the reason. As you spoke and informed us that if ever a small amount of self-enjoyment, actually the term I used was sense enjoyment, although it's practically the same, enters in the parampara, then it is not at all good. Yet, dear Maharaj, often after performing seva, sometimes a puffed up feeling tries to enter the consciousness. One can notice it and identify that a false ego feeling has appeared. How can one correct this? how can we stop the ego of doing some service also come in? Well, if we are... That's the point, that not everyone should act formally as an acharya. If one is performing devotional service for some feeling that I will be praised for doing this, or I'm so good for doing this, then better not to formally take the position of an acharya. How to stop this coming? Pray to Krishna. If we're serious, we can pray that Krishna, whenever I feel puffed up, please smash me and make me understand how insignificant I am. If we dare to pray like this, then Krishna will. That doesn't mean that when I say one shouldn't formally take the position of an acharya, still one should preach and try to help and instruct others. It's just like a parent, he has to instruct, parents have to instruct their children on what is right and what is wrong. It's not that the parent, they never did anything wrong in their lives, or that they're completely perfect, but still they have to instruct. Because they know what is right and what is wrong, they may not perfectly follow every, they may not be perfectly situated themselves, but still it's their duty to instruct. So everyone should instruct others in Krishna consciousness. But if one is going to take the elevated position of formally initiating, then should be up to a standard that others can fully look up to.
The question was, why should we keep the altar closed at the time of having prasad?
Why should we keep the offer closed at the time of
altar? Why should we keep it? Why can't we keep it open?
Why don't we keep it open? It's a matter of etiquette that we should, when in the, actually the temple room is not meant for eating in. We only do that because of space limitation. The temple room is meant for directly serving Krishna. So if we happen to be in a situation where due to space limitation we are honoring prasadam in the temple room, then we don't do so directly. That's one of the rules. We don't honor prasad in front of Krishna. It's just a matter of common sense. There are certain things you don't do in front of respectable people. Krishna is to be respected. You may do some exercise, but you don't do that in, of course, in the modern age people do exercise openly and publicly, but when you go to see a very respectable, just like if you're working in some big company and you get to see the big boss, some very highly placed person, you don't just start doing exercises in front. He's busy on the phones while you're waiting in his office, so you start doing some stretches, or even this. You know, people might do this to exercise their neck. You don't do that because this is a very respectable person. I should behave in a formal manner with him, so the formality should be maintained. These are not very difficult things to understand. Regarding what curse Kamsa is unable to enter into Vrindavan. Silly question. Please explain the meaning and difference of munis, rishis and yogis. Not much difference. It doesn't make much difference in the modern age anyway, because there are no munis, rishis or yogis except devotees, who are the best munis, rishis and yogis. Muni means a thinker. A thinker about spirit. Rishi literally means one, a mantra drashta, who perceives the Vedic knowledge. And yogi is one who is linked or attempting to link with the Supreme. How does one become a disciple? It's written, your servant. It doesn't say who it is. How does one become a disciple? What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita about this? Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena seva Upadekshanti tega gyaninastatvadasha. By service, submission, and relevant inquiries. Does one need to be formally initiated by a guru physically present in this world? Yes. Otherwise, how else are you going to get initiated? Otherwise, why are there gurus anyway? Otherwise, you can take initiation directly from Krishna. Like Vrindavan Dham, does Navadvip Dham exist in the spiritual sky too? Yes. How does one... It's exactly the same question. How does one become a disciple? Does one need to be formally initiated by a guru physically present? What is the best way to give children Krishna consciousness age 6 to 8 years? Well, as I was saying in the class, how to apply the message of Krishna consciousness in various circumstances, how to teach it, that is the business of an acharya. So it may be different in different times, places and circumstances. So you'll have to see with your children exactly what's the best way for them. If they're very interested in drawing, you might encourage them to draw pictures of Krishna. If they're very interested in playing games, which usually children at that age are, then you can maybe have games of Krishna. In general, Srila Prabhupada said that if the parents themselves act in Krishna consciousness, the children will automatically follow. So it's a big question which I just briefly answered because I'm over time already. Hare Krishna.